Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. So, the other day, Neil made a friend. He looks down at the floor and he goes, "That's it, there's a slug on the carpet." And I go, "That's not a slug, that's a leaf." And he looks back at me and goes, "It's a slug." Like, real ignorant, you know? Like, "You fucking ignorant twat. How can you not see that that's a slug?" So he gets a piece of paper and goes to scoop up the slug and goes, "Come on, mate." He scoops it onto the paper and it flips. Like, it flips and he just picks it up, holds it to his face and real defeatedly goes, "It's a leaf."
Look, did it or did it not look sluggish?
It looked like a leaf. I just really wish you would wear your glasses more. You are fucking blind.
No, I'm not. I'm not blind.
Neil, the other day at work, you looked at me and went, "Is that a spider on the wall?" And I went, "What?" Because it was like above my head. So I turned and looked at it. And I went, "That's a fucking screw."
I did, yeah. No, but that wasn't my fault. That was, so there was a light bouncing off it.
Mm-hmm.
And it like caused multiple shadows
mm-hmm.
around the screw. So it looked like spider's legs.
Well, it didn't look that way for me. And the other worker who was still with us looked and their face, when they looked back at you, like, fucking what?
Yeah, but...
They were wearing their glasses.
All I had to do was step left or right and the shadow weren't there. Like, it didn't look like a spider. I could tell mm-hmm. it was a screw.
Yeah.
But from where I was standing originally, just a quick glance, there's a spider.
And a leaf was a slug.
Right, that one, yeah, it did pain me, but you were right. But that leaf was curled round and it
very sluggish.
It looked like a slug.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, so it was only once it flipped on the paper and I was like...
It was how it flipped, because it was, like the leaf, it was so light, it flipped. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like a slug rolling. You just look so upset. I don't know if you're upset because you had lost the friend you thought you had, or like you said, because I was right.
But you, I just remember you were nearly on your knees laughing, going, "Come here, mate."
It was a combination of the "come here, mate" and the defeat.
Mm.
Absolutely distraught look in your eyes. You haven't been the same since.
I just don't like being wrong.
No, I know that. I don't think it's so much you don't like being wrong. I think you don't want me to be right.
Oh, there is that.
Mm.
I love when you're wrong. I do get pleasure from you being wrong because you're so... you're right a lot of the time, but it pains me when I know you're wrong, but I can't prove you're wrong. So you just take it as you're right. And I just deal with it because there's nothing I can do.
Can you give me an example off the top of your head? Because I want to know what you mean by like, I just take the win kind of thing.
Well, no, you don't take it. I give it you.
No, but you're saying that like, because you can't prove it, I just assume I'm right.
It'll be right. So we've established, but I haven't got a good memory. I've got quite a bad memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets used against me.
Oh, here we go.
Because you'll say something, and this has actually happened where you've said it, and my next thing is a response to what you've said, and then you'll be like, why are you saying that? And I'll go, because you said this, and you'll go, I didn't say that. It's like, I've literally just heard you say that. I'll start looking around the room, even though there's just me and you there. I'll start looking around the room going, well, some fucker did.
You really, really try hard to paint this narrative with me. I have to be honest with you. We're going to start getting messages saying like, Neil, you know, if you need help, let me know.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't had it yet. I'm a shell of myself.
I thought I was a shell of a woman.
Yeah, you are.
It's the blind leading the blind here is what you're saying.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
So, what have you got for us today?
Today, we are going to be talking about the serial killer, Harvey Miguel Robinson.
Okay.
Harvey Miguel Robinson was born on the 6th of December, 1974, in Allentown, Pennsylvania. From an early age, Harvey, or as he was nicknamed, Miggy, displayed some troubling behaviours and issues with authority. Things like threats or aggressive outbursts, one of which resulted in him assaulting a teacher and an arrest for theft at the tender age of 9.
You don't have to feel sorry for teachers. Like some,
I couldn't do it.
Some of them ask for it. But
Mr. G had it coming.
Some of them have it coming. You can tell that they've got themselves in that position because they want power. Yeah. They want to push someone around and that. But there's some, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, you come in riddled with anxiety, mm-hmm. knowing the shit show you're walking into. We had one who had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, my English class once. So I think our teacher went on maternity leave, and we had, I think it was 3 that came in. They kept leaving.
Mm.
And one of them was... If she didn't have a nervous breakdown, she was close to it.
Well, yeah. So our science teacher, I think I had her for 2 years. It was supposed to be 3 years, but she had the nervous breakdown in me last year. Like we were horrible as kids.
Oh, kids are terrible. They're brutal.
So basically she had osses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least one. And, It was poorly, and it was shot. Well, it was put down.
Mm-hmm.
It died.
So what you're saying is you don't know that it was shot. You're just saying
No, that was the rumor. We went round saying she shot her horse.
Christ.
And that was the one what did it. We were sat in class, and we were just chanting repeatedly, "Nay, nay, bang, bang." And she just broke down, screamed, and walked out.
That's fucking awful.
Never saw her again.
See, I mean, we've talked about this before about teachers. I mean, I'm sure our listeners think we've a bit of a chip on our shoulders. about teachers, which I definitely do from my experience.
Yeah.
You know, like we said, the good ones are fantastic. The bad ones are, like you said, the power trip thing. But what you did was twisted.
Well, it weren't solely me. I was just one of them chanting.
You weren't one of the ringleaders, no.
I was one of them chanting. What?
I was one of.
No, but it's like kids that they're as cruel as they are clever, aren't they?
They're bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really are.
They don't understand the severity of what they're saying. I certainly didn't.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't go up to someone now, you know, say if someone came to work and they went,
my dog's died. Woof, woof, bang, bang.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
My dog's been hit by a car. Woof, woof, beep, beep.
But yeah, I will never forget that for as long as I live. Nay, nay, bang, bang.
His father was an alcoholic who was said to have both physically and emotionally abused Harvey's mother before leaving the family entirely.
I don't know how you can do that. Slap your mother about it.
He didn't. It was his father.
Oh, okay.
But in 1962, before his parents had even gotten together, Harvey's father had been convicted of manslaughter for beating his partner to death. Her name was Marlene Perez, and she was 27 years old. Marlene had been so severely beaten that she was barely recognisable. For this, Harvey's father served 7 years.
That's not a lot, is it?
No. I mean, manslaughter as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, the more positive points of Harvey's life was that he was said to be an intelligent young man, a talented athlete competing in wrestling, cross-country, football and American football. And he did have a good relationship with his mother. But in regards to his father, it seems the apple didn't fall far from the tree.
When you say football and football...
Soccer.
Yeah. So yeah. Say soccer.
Soccer. It was just, we'd usually say football.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a Yank,
mm-hmm.
it's better to just say soccer and American football.
Well, I chose to say football and American football.
Yeah, but then we ended up having to have this discussion.
Well, we didn't actually, because I clarified by saying football and American football. Do you know the funny thing is I wrote soccer and then was like, no, I'd say football, so I'll change it to football and American football. Do you think subconsciously I did that just to trigger this conversation?
Probably.
Mm.
To have this spiffing conversation.
The first of Harvey's confirmed attacks took place in August of 1992. When he was just 17 years of age.
Well, you're saying just 17 years of age?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was like in your area for upbringing, but we were assaulting each other from like 11, 12 years old.
So I'm going to tell you about the first attack and then we can come back to what you've just said.
Okay.
See if it's at the same level.
Okay.
On the 9th of August, the neighbour of 29-year-old nurse's aide Joan Burkhart contacts the police to say that they hadn't seen her for a few days and that they had previously heard screams which they believed may have come from her first floor apartment. Police arrive at her home at approximately 11:30 a.m. When they enter her apartment, they notice there was no signs of forced entry and the residence was clean and tidy. They walk into the living room to find Joan lying on her stomach on the floor, and the TV had been left on full volume. Joan was wearing a nightshirt and shorts, which had been ripped and pulled up. With 37 injuries to her head, her skull had been fractured by blunt force trauma. She had been beaten to death, and the strikes were so vicious that her hair had become embedded within the skull fractures.
Fucking hell.
There was also defensive wounds to both of her hands. Now, some sources claim that Harvey had sexually assaulted Joan, while others state that Harvey had actually taken a pair of her underwear and used them to masturbate with. A semen sample was able to be obtained and entered into the database, but they received no matches. Joan's killer, Harvey, was actually already in custody on unrelated charges of burglary. Now, only a few days prior, on the 5th of August, Joan had filed a police report after her apartment had been broken into. Her screen door had been cut, and the fan which she had left on had been turned off, as well as $50 being stolen.
Rocking for $50?
Well, it was more of a case of sussing the place out.
Yeah. I don't trust them screen doors. You always hear about the.
They're not really a thing over here.
No.
I don't think I've ever seen them.
No, because they're useless.
Well, I think they're more a case to like keep flies and stuff out, aren't they? They're not like any level of protection.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm.
Why don't we have them?
I don't know. I think you would really benefit from it, you know, because of your little outburst by the fruit flies.
Oh, we're back on that, are we? Mm.
And the slugs, don't forget. We get a lot of insects in this house.
Yeah, we had a grasshopper and all.
Yeah.
And that black wasp.
Mm. Anyway, back to the case.
Mm-hmm.
On the 9th of June 1993, at about 6:45 a.m, the police receive a call from a resident of East Gordon Street. 15-year-old Charlotte Smoyer, who delivered their newspaper, hadn't been by that morning, and her cart appeared to have been abandoned. Fearing for her safety, a search ensued. A trail of blood in a nearby wooded area would lead police to Charlotte's body, which had been crudely buried beneath some logs. She was left partially undressed and had been sexually assaulted. Charlotte had also been stabbed 22 times, 16 in her back, 6 in her neck, and her throat had also been slit.
Fucking hell.
Superficial cuts to her neck indicate that the knife had been held against her neck during the attack. The weapon used was a single-edged knife and about 4 inches in length. To highlight the overkill of this attack, by the 7th stab, her wounds were determined to have been fatal. DNA evidence was extracted from her body, but again, there was no matches found in the database. In response to the murder of Charlotte, the Morning Call newspaper issued a statement. Quote, "The Morning Call is deeply saddened by the tragic death of the Morning Call carrier, Charlotte Smoyer, and we offer our condolences to the Smoyer family. We share in the community's outrage over this heinous crime and urge everybody to be on the alert until the murderer is found. The Morning Call is offering a reward in the total amount of $10,000 to the individual or individuals who provide specific information resulting in the detection, arrest, and conviction of the person or persons responsible for the murder of Charlotte Smoyer on Wednesday, the 9th of June, 1993.
Just realised we never came back to Neil's reference of him assaulting other children at the age of 12. Was it 12 you said?
11, 12 I said, yeah. But mm-hmm.
Is it at the same level as that?
No.
Well.
I just meant like we'd end up scrapping over losing at hide and seek or 50 up save me or football.
Yeah.
Just end up kicking lumps out of each other.
Yeah. But we're talking about a 17-year-old lad breaking in, possibly sexually assaulting and beating a woman to death.
Yeah, no, I never did that.
Not so much.
No. Actually, while we're on that subject...
Actually!
No. While we're on that subject... No.
Actually, lads. No.
While we're on the subject, because Megan said this isn't a thing, and I've asked other British people and they haven't heard of it. Listeners, has anyone... When you was a kid, did any of you play 50 Up Save Me?
Oh, here we fucking go. The stupidest name for a game. Right, I think listeners would be quicker to recognise the game from what I called it as a kid. Tip the can.
No.
Tip the can, lads.
What's the can?
51 Pick Up Save Me. What the fuck is it?
What's the can?
The can is whatever you want it to be.
50 Up Save Me is... Someone counts to 50.
Yeah.
While you all go and hide.
Yeah.
And then if they find you...
You have to get to the save point.
Yeah, if they find you, you
both
leg it.
That's where you tip the can. Yeah.
Well, say it were a lamppost.
Mm-hmm.
You leg it back and say, I got there first.
Yeah.
I'd have to say, 50 up save me.
That's just ridiculous. It actually irritates me. The amount of stupid fucking words British people use. You have to complicate everything.
Knock a door, run. That's very simple. Edge hopping.
What was it you called nicking? Scrumping, was it? Nicking apples was like scrumping. Scrumping. Is that specific to like nicking fruit? Or is that just robbing?
Yeah, fruit mainly, yeah.
Yeah.
Scrumping.
Scrumping. I will never, ever get over that, though. The 50 pickup save me or whatever.
50 up save 50 me. Up,
I'll never remember it because there's too many words. It just pisses me off. So this is like, you ever see that video of that guy? He's like taking the piss out of like British people. He's like, oh, my mother's home. We had scrum diddly. Yeah. That's you.
Twat.
Mm. On the 20th of June, Harvey entered the home of another woman who he had been stalking. His entry point was through a downstairs window. But when he made his way up to her bedroom, he saw her boyfriend asleep in the bed next to her. So Harvey decides not to follow through with his attack on this woman, but does decide to attack her 5-year-old daughter instead. He takes her downstairs, where he sexually assaults and strangles her, leaving her for dead in the laundry basket.
Fucking hell.
Well, this girl does survive the attack. She then tells her mother what happened and is taken to the hospital. There's bruising to her face and neck, and due to the strangulation, blood vessels in her eye had burst.
I've done that from a sneeze.
On the 17th of June, 1993, 37-year-old Denise Samcali and her husband John return home from a 5-day sailing trip. They arrive home and notice a few things that seem out of place. There was no signs of forced entry and nothing appeared to have been stolen. That was until John headed upstairs to their bedroom and sees that his guns are missing. So they call the police and file a report. They had just had some work done on their home and thought it was possibly one of the workmen who had done this. The detective checks out these two men that John had named and brought them in for interviews. But their stories check out. A few days later, John is away on business, leaving Denise on her own in the home. So not only is Denise a bit on edge given the recent break-in, but not long before this, the news had broken about the murder of Charlotte Smoyer in the area. Although any form of home invasion or violent crimes are concerning, Denise did not immediately think to link her break-in with the murder of a 15-year-old girl. Why would she necessarily?
Why would you? Yeah. Why is that funny?
As soon as I said it, you were like, you were hot on my fucking coattails there. Why would you? Why would you do that? I'm just making the point that you wouldn't necessarily link them, but it's still concerning to have any type of violence or home invasion. Look at the way you're looking at me right now. Look, clueless. Your gob hanging open. On the evening of the 28th of June, Denise begins the 1-mile walk home from her office.
So it's about 15 minutes.
As she walks down the street, she gets the sense that someone is watching her. When she walks into her home, it's the middle of summer and the house is absolutely roasting. And they didn't have any air conditioning, so Denise decides to open the windows to air the home out, and she settles down for the evening.
You know what's the best way to cool your gaff down from hot weather? Little trick for you. So you open two windows while you're in one room. Yeah?
Cross ventilation.
Yeah, but not just that. Turbo boost it. You get a fan, and you put it on, but facing one of the windows. And that's blowing all the hot air out and then all the new air in. It's a good way to clear a fart as well.
During the night, Denise wakes up and she gets a feeling similar to the unease she'd experienced as she walked home earlier that night. She thinks there's someone in her house and debates with herself whether she should get up or not. Ultimately, she decides to get up and get out.
Well, that's an interesting point. So for you, you know, because you're a woman, say I'm away on business.
Business? What business do you have? Right.
Right, I'm on okay. Traitors. I've gone to go on Traitors.
You've finally realised your dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Traitors or Deal or No Deal or something.
Deal or No Deal. Okay.
You're in on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And clear as day, you heard a noise downstairs. Do you think you would be like, right, I'm barricading the door. Say you've got Ty and Norman in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Do you barricade the door or is it, I need to try and get out?
Well, I am a white woman, so I'm probably going to go downstairs and check out what the noise is.
What does that mean?
White women are always getting killed in horror movies. We're too nosy for our own good. We got to find out what it is.
Yeah, we are the sort who, like, cuddle up to a crocodile and...
You as a white woman, yes.
Well, I'm not...
Yeah, white people nonsense.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, you got a pet tiger. Yeah, oh, I'm going to tame it.
Mm-hmm.
And all this, yeah.
Well, I mean, it did happen before when I got up out of bed and checked a noise. Do you remember this?
No.
This was about, I want to say 2 years ago, maybe. It was a while ago.
Mm.
Year and a half, whenever it was. There was a weird noise and it was pitch black, middle of the night.
Mm.
So I got out of bed, switched the light on, checked what it was. And you were still in bed and you turned to me and go, you just got up. And went out there to check what it was. And you just said, what would you have done if someone had been stood there? And I'm like, well, that's when you come in. I will happily and investigate. But once the person's there, I'm going to shit myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm walking into death. And then I stand there. And yeah, it's not going to.
Yeah.
It's not going to work out.
With that night, I don't remember the noise. I do remember saying, what was your plan?
I still don't know what the noise was.
Yeah, I don't remember you getting up. I don't remember the noise.
It woke both of us up and we were like, what the fuck was that? And we sat there for like a second or two and then I jumped up. So I'm like, what the fuck is it? Switched on the light, nothing. I'm not joking. I was full on expecting someone to be stood there.
Yeah.
Well, I can't even exactly tell you what the noise was because it woke me up from my sleep. But it was loud and it was freaky, whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, I must have been asleep through most of it because the only bit I remember is saying to you, what was your plan? If you went out there and there was someone there, what was your plan?
I'd probably ask him to wait a sec while I call you for help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you just put down the knife for a minute? Okay. Can we talk about this?
Pick it back up because you're going to need it.
Honestly, the only thing I can think of is because it was in the house. The only thing I can think of was Ty had done something, but it didn't fucking sound like Ty. It sounded like a person.
Hmm.
I'm so fucking convinced of that. If I believed in ghosts, I'd probably Spirit. Think it was a ghost. Yeah. But I don't. So it wasn't. Anyway, enough of how fearless I am until I actually confront something. Back to Denise. As she walks out of her bedroom, Harvey exits the closet and lunges at Denise. Denise manages to get out of his grasp and makes it out of the front door, but Harvey soon catches up to her. Denise is brutally beaten, her lip slashed, and sexually assaulted in the front yard of her home. Harvey flees after a neighbour hears the commotion and turns on his floodlights. The knife used in the attack had been taken from her own kitchen. It was left on the floor wrapped in a napkin.
Oh, that would be to protect his hand. Oh, fingerprints. Oh, but fingerprints would be on the cloth. So it's to protect his hand.
Detective Halfnip's on the scene, lads.
Right. That is not going to become a thing. That's not... No, no, no. That's not a thing.
Nip it in the bud.
Yeah, well, brilliant. Basically, we have a Patreon member. What we love about this Patreon member. She has been supporting us from fucking really early on from the podcast. She's one of our first patrons and she listens every week. She hardly has any contact with us, but every time she does, it's like a highlight. You know, like the last time she contacted us, she called me a prick.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. She basically just drops in to insult Neil. And yeah. I appreciate her.
And now she's calling me half nip.
Mm.
So we appreciate that she's still there, but that is not becoming, that is not my name. We're not doing that.
About 3 hours later, at 6 a.m, Denise's husband, John, is on his way home from Philadelphia. He arrives to find his home marked off by police tape and is told by police that Denise is in the hospital. Of course, Denise was physically injured, but also psychologically. Understandably, she didn't want to be home alone. And when she would walk just 4 doors up to her parents' home, she would take a gun with her. They also upped their home security system, but this only goes so far.
See, I don't want to take it away from Denise, but you've got a feel for the husband.
What?
Yeah, you've got... No, I'm saying you... No, I'm not taking it away from Denise.
Yeah. But you mean how difficult it would be to come home to just the shock of that and your wife's not there.
Your wife's not there. Yeah. There's police tape.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would never want to leave your side.
Mm-hmm.
If something was to happen to you...
But what if
you...
you've got to be away on your important business?
Right. I'm trying to be nice here.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making it very difficult for me.
I apologise.
No, but can you understand, like...
No, I do get what you mean.
Like, me and you are together a lot. It'd be like, as soon as she's on her own, something's happened, so I need to stay with her now.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure it doesn't happen again. It'd be like, clearly she needs looking after. As soon as I'm not there, something's happened.
I think out of the two of us, now, you have the greater physical capability.
And the brains.
Right. You have the greater physical capability.
Mm.
But between the two of us, you're definitely the one that needs more looking after.
No, but out of the two of us...
I'm not saying that to sound like condescending or patronising. I just mean that you're someone, and I mean this in like a day-to-day sense, you do things without thinking.
Impulse.
About a month ago, you set yourself on fire.
What?
You were burning a thread off. you were burning a loose thread on your top, and your top, only a little bit, but your top caught on fire.
Yeah.
I've repeatedly told you not to do that, and you still do it.
Yeah. You also tell me not to super glue my cuts. Never mm-hmm. had an issue.
On the 14th of July, Harvey attacks yet another woman in the area. 47-year-old mother and grandmother, Jessica Jean Fortney. As Jessica slept, she was awoken by a vicious attack, which included her being pinned down, punched, sexually assaulted, and strangled. When Jessica was found, she had been partially undressed, and her face was bruised, bloodied, and swollen. I'm sure you're starting to see a pattern here. The window on the first floor had also been left open in this attack.
Yeah. But the bit where I'm not seeing a pattern is how he attacks. Sometimes it's stabbing, sometimes it isn't. So it'd be interesting to find out how they made the connection.
Well, I mean, yes, there's different means, but all of them are beaten to some capacity.
Yeah.
Whether he uses a knife or, you know. Her cause of death was strangulation and blunt force trauma. There was over 50 injuries found on her body, and it's believed that Harvey had been wearing rings during the attack due to the severity of damage caused by the punches. Now, Jessica's 7-year-old granddaughter had actually witnessed the assault. And although absolutely horrifying that she had to witness this, it does mean that she was able to provide a description, and a description that was matched to that of Denise's. By now, it's become clear that there's a connection, and police are fairly certain that they're dealing with a serial killer.
How have I not heard of this guy?
Yeah, it is an odd one that it doesn't seem to be as high profile of a case, especially given his age.
Hmm.
So, other than the matching description, there's not much else to go on in terms of linking the people who were attacked. All of these women seem to have been selected at random. He chose women and girls, varying in age, but all fairly young, all under the age of 50. He targets adult women who tend to have a more curvy figure, but then he attacks a 5-year-old and a 15-year-old.
Well, he only did the 5-year-old because he couldn't, the mother, because the fella were there, weren't it?
Yes, but he's still chosen to attack a 5-year-old girl.
Yeah.
So he's throwing the police for a loop. But they do know they have to act quickly. Harvey doesn't seem to leave much of a cooling off period. And eventually, he's going to widen the radius of his attacks.
Mm.
On the 18th of July, 4 days after the murder of Jessica Jean Fortney, at about 4 a.m, Harvey breaks into Denise's home again. Now, luckily, the piercing sound of their new security alarm was enough to scare him off. But still, an absolutely horrifying ordeal for Denise. And it seems apparent that his intent was to kill her, knowing she would be able to ID him.
What I'd like to know is, how do they know it was him who broke in?
Well, they don't know for an absolute, but...
Right.
I mean, it's clearly him.
Yeah.
With his brazen behaviour, police thought it was best to assign an officer to stay with Denise at night. Of course for Denise's protection, but also with Denise's permission, they wanted her to stay within her home to use her as bait.
Would you be okay with that?
Well, look, fair folks to Denise, what a fucking icon to do this. I don't, if it was me in the situation, I don't know. I think, yes, but I feel more comfortable with more than one officer.
Yeah.
As my protection.
Yeah, like, well, if I was there, I wouldn't be leaving the house because he knows now that the house is alarmed. And if he still wants to kill her, he knows she has to be out of the home.
Well, by the 31st of August, after nearly 2 weeks on assignment, there's still no sign of Harvey. So Officer Brian Lewis decides to set a trap. He leaves the downstairs window open.
I was just going to say that.
You're just going to say to try and bait Harvey into the situation?
Yeah. Open window.
Well, they were right to do so because at about 1 a.m, Harvey enters the home. The officer radios for backup and waits for Harvey to fully enter the home before confronting him. But this time, he was armed, and shots are exchanged between Harvey and the officer. Harvey runs to the kitchen, and the officer retreats upstairs while he reloads and informs Denise and John that he's in the house. Now, all they can hear from their bedroom is loud banging, and the noise was so much that they could actually feel the shakes through the house. Essentially, Harvey is a caged animal at this point. When the officer makes his way back to the kitchen, he's mentally preparing for Harvey to jump out from around the corner.
Yeah.
But there was no one there. Harvey is already gone, and the glass panes on the back door have been smashed. But in the process of him escaping the home, he has clearly injured himself and has left a trail of blood through the garden. Police call around to various hospitals in hopes that Harvey would have gone to seek treatment. And at about 3:30 a.m, police receive a call from Lehigh Valley Hospital after a man had come in who was bleeding profusely from fresh lacerations to his arms and legs. He also had a bite mark on his right arm, which had been caused by Denise a few weeks prior in an attempt to defend herself. It's not looking good.
So it's fucked.
Well, Harvey soon realises that he had entered their trap and he attempts to leave the hospital, but not before police arrived. Harvey was arrested and held on a $1 million bail. His reign of terror over Allentown was finally over. A search of his home was conducted, and within his residence they find a black ski mask and a pair of gloves underneath the sofa cushion, various items of bloodstained clothing, a pair of trainers which matched a print that had been left on Charlotte's face, and a semi-automatic handgun which had belonged to Denise's husband, John. After his arrest, police obtained a DNA sample from him, which allowed them to connect Harvey to each case. But it wasn't until after his arrest that police would even link him to the murder of Joan Burghardt.
The bit I don't get, you know about them finding the stuff at his house?
Mm-hmm.
Why would he keep the bloodstained clothing?
So this is the thing. With Harvey's crimes, there's some level of preparation in that he stalked these women and clearly had sussed out their homes before attacking.
Mm.
But having said that, there's clearly some issues with impulsivity. Harvey was very disorganized and there was a total lack of concealment. And referencing the attack on the 20th of July, instead of leaving the home, Harvey was easily able to switch from attacking a grown woman to a 5-year-old child.
Yeah.
He already had the mindset that he was going to attack that night. And if he can't go for the person he intended, he simply chooses another that was within the home, and sadly, it was an incredibly vulnerable person.
Yeah.
This begs the question, to be so unbelievably bold to attack a child in the house where her mother slept, and her boyfriend, who Harvey deemed enough of a threat not to attack the mother, did Harvey enjoy the level of risk? Or was he just so caught up and didn't think past the point of his own sadistic sexual gratification and or thrill of murder? I also get a bit of a crossover of Richard Chase / Richard Ramirez vibe from him, you know, with the entering through the open windows and then also being able to just switch up the type of person he attacks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very kind of, they're the scariest ones because no one is safe.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's the act. It's, I'm doing this tonight.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you've seen cases, you know, when it's the killer tends to go after long, dark hair. So women cut their hair and bleach it blonde.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With someone like this, there's not that there's ever a way to protect yourself as such, but there's nothing you can do.
Mm.
On the 28th of February, 1994, Harvey pleads guilty. Although he did have a history of criminal behaviour, there was no evidence of mental illness. A forensic psychiatrist did testify for the defence to state that Harvey did have a dependency on drugs and alcohol. During his trial on the 3rd of September, Denise testified that she could not only identify him, but fully recall the attack. Harvey did not speak during the trial, but there was some witnesses to speak about the difficulties he faced in his earlier life. His defence argued that there was no proof that Harvey had intended to kill anyone when he entered Denise's home on the 18th of July. Quote, I can rob a bank 6 times. That doesn't mean if the bank is robbed a 7th time, I did it. Now, the only thing I can say in defence of the offence here is, what the fuck were they to say? Harvey, I mean, he's clearly guilty, yeah. And she's a defense attorney, not a miracle worker.
Yeah.
Just grasp at straws.
That's what I mean. You'd look through the paperwork and you'd just keep looking at him, and then you turn the page, carry on reading, and then you'd be like, what do you expect me to do?
Yeah, what are we doing here, lads? Just call it a day.
Like, just to let you know, I'm still getting paid, but you're fucked.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do.
I mean, in a case like this, it's the only thing you can do is work to lessen a sentence. It's,
yeah,
you're done for.
Yeah,
it's, and that, I mean, that's what they're trying to do. But yeah,
if they're trying to go for a death penalty, you try and get life.
Yeah. On the 8th of November, 1994, Harvey was found guilty by a jury. And on the 10th of November, at the age of 19, Harvey was sentenced to death by lethal injection. He showed no reaction as his sentence was being read aloud.
It's got to be one of the youngest death penalties. Like, to actually be executed at that age.
It is.
It is the youngest.
It's either the youngest or one of the youngest in the US. Now, although Harvey seemed to have no reaction to his sentence, after the fact, Harvey seems to have done the most to try and challenge his convictions. In 2006, Harvey was resentenced to life in prison for the murder of Joan Burghard. This was due to the fact that Harvey was just 17 years of age at the time of the murder. On the 14th of December 2012, Harvey waived his rights to appeal in exchange for a life sentence in the case regarding the murder of Charlotte Smoyer. The district attorney said of the matter, quote,
The Schmoyer family wanted to resolve this case so they can have some measure of closure. It has been almost 2 decades and they have endured continued trauma every time the case has been scheduled and continued when new appeals and motions have been filed. The following year, his death sentence for the murder of Jessica Jean Fortney was upheld. In October of 2019, he was resentenced to 35 years to life for the murder of Joan Burghard. Although the judge did recommend that Harvey donates his brain to science and said, quote, "The one gift you can give to the community is helping science understand your behaviour." His defence attorney said of this recommendation, quote, "I think the suggestion is completely understandable given how rare a serial killer is." While in prison, Harvey has actually sought out correspondence. He states that he enjoys exercise, writing, music, and reading self-help books. Quote, "Life is so precious, so anything I can do for another is something I'm interested in and like."
Is he taking the piss? Is he taking the absolute piss?
Yeah. Look, I believe in some cases, I believe in rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Harvey, I don't see it.
Well, he's constantly appealing.
I think he's very scary. Very scary individual.
Yeah.
And how quickly he was committing these crimes.
Yeah.
You know? And it's also the home invasion as well. He really didn't give a fuck.
No. And like I said, even after he's been caught, is appealing it, going, this isn't fair.
Mm.
And now is saying, like, self-help books, fuck off.
Well, the other thing as well is, I mean, I do place some value on considering the person's age. You know, if someone is very young when they commit a crime, that's, I do think at times allowances can be made.
Mm.
Not for a serial killer.
No.
Not for a serial sex offender or killer.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing. While retelling the story of her attack, Denise made a point to say that when you get attacked, you have it in your head that the perpetrator is going to look a certain way. You know, like we had previously talked about, some sort of monstrous figure lurking in the dark. But she said he looked totally normal, kind of a boy next door kind of thing.
Mm.
Except for his eyes. She said she felt like it was just pure evil in his eyes at that moment. On the 15th of February, 2021, Denise passed away suddenly in her home. She was remembered for her unique personality as a dynamic businesswoman and a generous, caring, and loyal person. Like we had just mentioned, Harvey seems to be a particularly scary individual. He committed these attacks and murders within a very short period of time. And the only reason there was even a gap between his first and second murder was because he was already in jail for burglary.
A couple of things what are going through my head is, I wonder what it was what triggered him at 17 to get started and just keep going. But I wonder if he did anything before that.
Well, Harvey is actually suspected of another attack in 1990. Basically, a teenage boy had climbed through the bedroom of a 13-year-old girl and she was beaten with a brick. So, definitely sounds like something Harvey would have done.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is the case of Harvey Miguel Robinson, the youngest serial killer to have been put on death row in the US. Had he not been caught, he very well could have gone on to become a pretty prolific serial killer.
Yeah. Especially at the rate he were going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would he have slowed down at least?
It's really hard to know. I mean, on one hand you go, my God, he was very bold, breaking into people's houses. And like you said, the amount of people in a short span of time. But he was also very sloppy in how he perpetrated these crimes.
Mm.
So,
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think he's a more scary individual because it just seems so, I don't get the sense he gives a fuck. I don't, it doesn't, like, I don't know a huge amount about him personally to comment on, you know, about who he is now.
Mm.
I don't get the sense that he is going to be rehabilitated.
Yeah. I'm just shocked that I hadn't heard of him. Like, even when I watch Forensic Files and stuff.
It doesn't seem to be a highly publicised case, which is quite shocking.
Because
it,
of his age.
Exactly. It's not just that he was a serial killer, but yeah, he was so incredibly young. There's at least that one kind of sensationalist point of the story.
But is that why it's kept quiet? Because of his age? They always try and protect, like, the, you know, the, especially in the UK, I know. Say if a 15-year-old killed someone, they're not going to publish their name.
No, I know what you're saying, but he was 18 for the majority of the attacks that, well, that we know about.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But over there, it's 21, isn't it?
Well, no, at 18, you're still an adult.
What, you're an adult who can't drink?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild.
And can't gamble.
Mm-hmm.
But you're an adult.
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on.
America, come on.
I don't know. That, like, to me, that seems like 21 is like, you know, it seems really late. But is that just because of how we grew up?
Yeah, 16.
To look at an 18-year-old and say they're an adult.
Yeah.
Seems wild. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Madness.
Madness. Not the band now.
No. I like Madness.
They are good.
People running on the spot and stuff. What are you looking at me like that for?
No, I thought you were going to say more. It was just, you just, the way you just say something, just leave it there.
No, that's what the crowd did. Did, like, run on the spot.
Yeah.
But anyway, oddity.
Oscar the Therapy Cat.
I'm all for this.
I thought you would be. Oscar was a therapy cat who lived and worked in the Steerhouse Nursing and Rehabilitation Centre in Providence, Rhode Island. He has been featured in the New England Journal of Medicine and has even been the subject of a book, Making Rounds with Oscar, The Extraordinary Gift of an Ordinary Cat. Now, the thing about Oscar is he was a bit of a morbid bastard. Oscar was basically the Grim Reaper of this nursing home. If a patient was nearing the end of their life, Oscar would choose to nap with them in the hours leading up to their death. Could you imagine? Could you imagine you're laid in bed and you hear the ominous pitter-patter of Oscar's little feet and you just think to yourself, ah, shite.
I was just about to say, if I was laid in bed and he jumped up on the bed, I'd be like, fuck off. Fuck off. Get out of the room. Fuck off.
Get the spray bottle out. Well, the reality is, he could probably sense this from their lack of mobility, or he was possibly able to pick up the scent of their cells dying, maybe. You know, it's most likely a sense thing. And Oscar, being such a good boy, was just trying to comfort them.
Where's the therapy?
He was there to comfort and provide companionship for people.
Hours before they snuffed it?
No, that, I'm saying he was a therapy cat, but Oscar, whether he meant to or not, essentially
he promoted
himself to Grim Reaper.
Right.
Now, once Oscar had identified about 20 to 30 people who were near to death, the staff knew that there was definitely something coming, and if Oscar was saw laid napping with a patient, they would ring the family to let them know to come in and say their final goodbyes. Quote, Oscar was initially sort of a very scared cat. He wouldn't really like to come out. He would keep to himself. Oftentimes you'd find him in the supply closet or underneath a bed somewhere, and it wasn't really until somebody was near death that Oscar would sort of come out front and centre. On the 22nd of February, 2022, Oscar passed away at the age of 17. But he is credited with correctly predicting about 100 deaths.
Okay.
Pour one out for Oscar.
Okay. That's impressive, the 100 deaths. But can you imagine what I would be like if I got in bed and he jumps up on the bed and I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. But then I wake up in the morning and look and be like, you were wrong there, weren't you?
You'd start challenging the cat.
I'd try and ruin
his reputation.
Well, the cat's dead.
What?
If I woke up, but the cat's dead, I'd be like, oh, you missed there.
You're telling me you're going to argue with a dead cat. I can believe this. I really can. What were we saying earlier about you wanting to be right?
Well, it's not going to argue back, is it?
No, not so much. No.
But that is, like you said, yeah, it's probably sensing that something's dying inside. Like they're getting some sort of aroma from something. Well, I'll be keeping an eye on Ty anyway.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there'll be a logic there.
Yeah.
But it is just...
madness.
It is just... It's madness. Again, not the band. It's just eerie. Especially like they're saying, for a cat that generally likes to be left. He clearly wasn't a very good therapy cat overall. Mm. He was just kind of arsing about the gaff.
Well,
but as soon as he sensed death, he was like, right, this is my department, lads. Yeah. I'm on it.
Well, this definitely took a turn. When you said the therapy cat, I thought you was going to say, well, it's not just that cat, any cat. Like, I find it, if I'm stressed out, and if Ty jumps up and lays on my lap and I stroke Ty, it calms me down. Just stroking. I thought it was going that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Not this.
You're welcome. But the thing is, though, like, I mean, I love Ty with all my heart. He is my little baby boy.
But you don't trust him.
I don't trust him. No, not at all. This is the thing. I will constantly call Ty for cuddles and he'll lay on my chest. He'll snuggle in. But then about 20 minutes later, he'll get this look in his eyes and his head will start turning. It's like, he's about to rip the bastard arm off me.
See,
he does.
He doesn't do that with me. So it doesn't matter whether I'm laid there topless or I've got a t-shirt on. He'll lay and he'll cuddle up, being all cute. I'm stroking him. And then he'll start clawing at me.
Yeah, and, like you're a pincushion.
Yeah. And you'll lay there and go, Oh, look how relaxed he is. And I'm there, owls all over me, fucking in agony.
Actually, can I just throw something out here to the cat owners? Ty does this nearly every day. After I've eaten a meal, that's quite often when he'll come over and he'll start kneading on my stomach. It's like trying to help my digestion.
Yeah, I think it's just a routine.
Do you think?
I think you're looking way too far into it.
I don't know. We might have another Oscar here. He's sensing something. It's like her digestion is fucked. Got to give her a hand here.
Breaking the food down for you. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good boy.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.